So we're in a series that began a couple of weeks ago. We're looking at the words that Jesus spoke from a cross to which he was nailed and dying a painful death by crucifixion. And those words cost Jesus something, and they were intentional, and he says them in ways that cause us to understand that they were not just things said in passing, but said with God-given intentionality. Let me set the stage for you a little bit of what is unfolding. Before Jesus is in this position here, he has been falsely arrested, has gone through 6 illegal draining trials through an entire night. The night after that, and in the morning, he is tied to a wooden post. And the Bible uses just one word: he was scourged. And we can run right by that really quickly. What that means is his back was opened up with a whip that contained pieces of metal and bone and glass. It tells us that he was beaten with rods, basically beaten with sticks. Then he was made to carry that cross beam to his own crucifixion. The Bible tells us he couldn't even make it the entire way by himself, that he collapses and they get somebody else to help get that piece of wood to where it needs to be. And then nails, spikes are driven through his hands and through his feet, and he's placed on that cross. And there's a huge crowd that is there, and they are mocking and jeering him, hurling insults at him. And with the exception of one, all of his disciples, the men with whom he has spent the last 3 years, they've all run for their lives. But gathered around the cross still are some women. But standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. And if we wonder, well, why weren't they arrested, or why aren't they running for their lives? And there are commentators who will say, well, in those days, you know, women had less respect legally standing, not saying it's right, just saying it was the way that it was. And so they really weren't viewed as any kind of a threat. Now, one of the accusations that is leveled at the Bible goes something like this, that the Bible is disrespectful to women and puts women down. And I got to tell you, that is just flat out not true. Women were one of Jesus' secret weapons when he was here. Now, you have women that are sitting in the front row when he's teaching. You have women that are journeying together with him. You have women that are supporting him even financially during the time he goes public with his ministry. You have a woman who is the first one to run and go tell her whole town about who Jesus is and what he told her about himself. A first witness of Jesus being out of a tomb again, alive again, was a woman. And so from beginning to end, you see Jesus treat women in a way that is unprecedented in the ancient world. And if there's maybe, you know, all kinds of different reasons to be a follower of Jesus, and you are a woman, let me tell you that he sees you with the absolute value of everyone else. And the Bible portrays that in ways that you will not find elsewhere. But one of the other things that comes along with accusations against the Bible also goes something like this. You know, the accounts aren't exactly the same of what happened, and therefore it's, you know, showing you that there are mistakes and people wrote this later and they didn't get their stories straight. And one of them revolves around this. Right there, 4 ladies that John says were standing there, Jesus' mother, his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. But there are 4 gospel accounts. We're in John today, but there's Matthew, Mark, and Luke as well. And when you look at the others, you see some other names that are sprinkled in there. You always see Jesus' mother. But then in Mark's gospel, he mentions Salome. And then in Matthew's gospel, he mentions the mother of Zebedee's sons. And then Mark and Matthew mention Mary, the mother of James and Joseph. And we go, yeah, they're not all the same. So what exactly does that mean? Does it mean that the Bible is full of errors? Well, scholars right now are saying, you know what, these, in many respects, are the same people. And in the same way that we refer to somebody in a number of different ways is exactly what is going on here, because you have 4 different eyewitnesses who are saying this is who was present. And so Salome and the mother of Zebedee's sons is Jesus' mother's sister. And Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, is Mary, the wife of Clopas. In the same way that people would say, well, Roy was there, a pastor was there, the husband of Sally was there, the father of Chelsea and Ryan was there, or when a solicitor calls Mr. Gruber, no, it's Gruber, and then click, and a hang up on him, or a certain fan of the Dallas Cowboys was there, right? They're all the same way to refer to one person. And so what you have is different eyewitnesses who are saying this is who was there, and it fits. So some of the accusations leveled at the Bible, whether it be the value of women or there being all kinds of mistakes, all accusations are not always what they claim to be. And then Jesus speaks. John is there. All the other disciples have fled. A group of courageous women is still there. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved, and let's just pause on that real fast, a number of times in the Gospel of John, John uses that phrase, and the person he's referring to, who's the disciple whom Jesus loved? It's John. That he kind of speaks about himself in the third person. And so out of all the people that Jesus knew, there were large crowds. He had his disciples, and then there was a smaller group. And within that, they think there was a group that was, you know, kind of three guys that were closer to Jesus than any other. And out of all the people that he was with, we might put it this way, John was Jesus' closest friend when he was in this world. So the disciple whom Jesus loved standing nearby, John, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." Then he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home. And the words that you see in yellow are the same word in the original language in which this was first written. And that is the key to understanding why this is contained there and why Jesus would use some of his precious strength to speak these words. What is it that Jesus saw? What did he want Mary to see? What did he want John to see? And in that, what it helps us to understand is what God sees in some of our most difficult moments, our painful moments, so that we can see what he sees. So let's talk first about what Jesus saw. When Jesus saw his mother, so he is dying, being crucified on a cross. And there is his mother. And we might go, well, where was Joseph, right? If you're familiar with the Christmas story at all, you know it's Mary and Joseph, and they take that, you know, donkey ride, and they're in a manger there with the baby Jesus and all of that. And we go, well, where is Joseph when all of this is happening? And in the Bible, we have some records of when Jesus was born, he was there. When Jesus was 12 years old, Joseph is there. But now, when Jesus is 33, Joseph is not mentioned. And the clear understanding of that is somewhere along the way, Joseph dies. And so Mary is a widow. And in that culture, if a woman was a widow, the responsibility to care for the mother, and there was no social services back then, the responsibility would fall to the oldest son. Well, who is that? Jesus, and he's dying on a cross. And so Jesus looks down, and in the middle of his pain, he sees the pain of someone that matters so much to him. And the question that I think comes to us through what Jesus saw goes something like this: can I see beyond my pain? That in the middle of what I'm going through, can I see what others may be going through? And what happens in painful moments a lot of times is our circle gets very small, and maybe for reasons that feel very self-justified, we think, well, I got a lot going on and I need, you know, care myself. How can I think about anybody else? And yet Jesus says, even in those moments, there's an opportunity to see something beyond our own pain. And it could well be that your greatest pain, my greatest pain, could be the greatest opportunity to meet the need of somebody around us. And I don't know what that might be for you, what you've gone through, what's been hard, what's been difficult. Maybe that's something you're going through right now. Maybe it's in the past. In our own lives, I've shared this a number of times, you know, before we had our two kids, we went through a miscarriage. And people who had gone through that were incredibly helpful when we were going through that. And after that time, the opportunity to you know, just encourage other people through that was greater because of that pain that was personal. And so it could be that your greatest pain is an opportunity to help someone else. So a modern example of this as well, and it even comes from a little boy who had gone through something and then saw the need in somebody else and did something about it. Let me show you this by way of video. Check this out.
Our final story begins with a chance encounter between an officer and a gentle young soul. Steve Hartman met them on the road.
Here at the Ohio Air National Guard base near Toledo.
This is the 180th Fighter Wing.
Lieutenant Colonel Frank Daly still can't believe the honor recently bestowed upon him.
It's incredible being recognized in such a manner.
It happened at a Cracker Barrel, of all places. As the security camera shows, Lieutenant Colonel Daly entered the restaurant on February 7th for an early lunch. At about the same time, 8-year-old Miles Eckert came in with his family. Miles, in the green hoodie, was very excited. He just found a $20 bill in the parking lot.
Just sitting there?
Yeah.
Did you start thinking of what you could spend it on?
I kind of wanted to get a video game, but then I decided not to.
He changed his mind when he saw that guy in uniform.
Because he was a soldier, and soldiers remind me of my dad.
And so, with his dad in mind, Miles wrapped the 20 in a note that read, "Dear soldier, my dad was a soldier. He's in heaven now. I found this $20 in the parking lot when we got here. We like to pay it forward in my family. It's your lucky day. Thank you for your service. Signed, Miles Eckert, a Gold Star kid." Army Sergeant Andy Eckert was killed in Iraq just 5 weeks after Miles was born. All the kid has ever had are pictures and dog tags.
This is his wedding ring.
Other people's memories and his own imagination.
I imagined him as a really nice person and somebody that would be really fun.
The dad he imagines must also love a good story.
There.
Because after lunch that day, Miles asked his mom, Tiffany, to make one more stop.
Excellent. He wanted to go see his dad. And he wanted to go by himself that day.
She took this picture from the car. Follow the footsteps and you'll see Miles standing there behind the flag, presumably telling his dad all about it. And whether heaven heard him or not, his good deed continues to impress here on earth.
You've read it more than once?
I look at it every day.
Kid gave you a bigger gift than $20.
A lifetime direction, for sure.
Lieutenant Colonel Daly says he's already given away the 20 and plans to do much more. He also hopes that little green post-it will inspire other people across the country to give as sincerely and dutifully as this father and son.
Could it be that your greatest pain is an opportunity to see things that maybe you would not have seen any other way, and to just see even what Jesus saw that day? Yeah, it's painful and it's hard, but it can also lead me to see what others are going through. And we might say, well, you know, it's you know, clearly obvious why Jesus would do that. I mean, he was God in the flesh when he was here, but the rest of us are just trying to figure it out. But I would suggest to you that what Jesus did goes beyond that. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, it says, first of the Ten Commandments recorded there, honor your father and mother. Right? And God doesn't just speak words to us that, hey, this is a good idea, a good principle for you to practice, and I'll just kind of sit up here, you know, in my throne room in heaven. But when Jesus was here, you know what? That's what he did. And in that last moment, that's what he was doing. And you notice there's no expiration date with this. It's not honor your father and mother while you're a kid. It's not honor your father and mother while you're living under their roof. This is a way in the middle of a relationship that changes as time goes on. And Jesus was doing that. So God gives us not just ideas. He gives us the heart of God that when he was here were things that he made real. One of the descriptions about who God is and what his heart is like, his character is like, comes from Psalm 68, that he is father of the fatherless and protector of widows is God in his holy habitation. Right? And we think, wow, that's so poetic, that's so beautiful. What does that really mean? Well, you look at Jesus on a cross, it means something very specific. It means something very real. And what it invites us to do in moments even that are difficult is look past our own pain and see if there's a way that we can see the pain of someone else. So that's what Jesus saw. What was he inviting Mary to see? He says, woman, behold your son. Now, in our day, we go, woman, you know, that sounds disrespectful. And I got to tell you, that word is a word of absolute respect. I was taught that when you refer to a lady and you use miss and then her first name, that is a title of respect. And like we might use that in our day, this could be translated, dear lady, behold your son. And I think this question invites us to ask, can I see the help that is available to me? Because now Mary, who was going to be without any kind of social services structure around her, must have been wondering in some way, in the middle of all that she was experiencing, what happens to me now? And Jesus says, take a look at John and see him now as your own son. And how easy it is for us in those moments that are difficult to shrink the circle way down and to make it just about me, myself, and I. But the invitation is to pick our heads up a little bit, look around us and see what help is available to us. And then the community that God seeks to create, even what this is meant to be, not in a weird way, is like extended family, that there are resources in the form of people that are around you and me all the time. I want to show you a Zoom call that I did this last week with somebody who just went through a small group that we have here called Grief Share, and it's pretty obvious what that's about. People who are grieving some loss, and I want to just give you a little bit of a sense of what one person's experience was going through that. Check this out. Well, today I'm talking with Jim Betchard, and Jim recently was a part of our Grief Share group that met here. And Jim, I want to just ask you today if you could just share with us, what was it that led you to be a part of that group, to join in something that focuses on grief?
My wife passed away just about a year ago this week. And at the time, the church was not in session, so I went online and listened online, and I saw that you had a grief share program. And so I called up invited myself to attend. And so I got started, and it was 13 weeks in session. By that time, we were ready to meet every week, and it started out with videos, and then after the video we talked about the video, and we always had homework, and the homework was kind of in two parts. One part was basically an evaluation of how we did with our grief this week, and then the second part was kind of reviewing what was on the video and things that we saw and how it would help us. And throughout the program, there was always some practical steps to help me going forward, dealing with grief. And a lot of times there's guilt and you have to get through that somehow. And for me, it was looking at my symptoms through the program and looking at ways of dealing with those symptoms and finding some stability in my life. And after 13 sessions, I found that a lot of ways that I dealt with it was talking with friends, talking with my family, a lot of phone calls. Seems like no one ever calls me anymore. I call them. And faith and trust in God seems to be the leading factor. And that has helped me tremendously.
Wow. And we're sure sorry to hear about the loss of your wife. Jim, this year after you started that, as you reflect back on your time in GriefShare, what lasting impacts would you say that it had upon you? You know, one of the goals is to help people through grief. How do you feel that that took place for you?
I think it's helped me tremendously. I still have grief. I don't think I'll ever get over it, but it helped me cope with some of the symptoms of my grief and finding a little more stability in my life, finding out things that I have to do and how I can do them. And that has helped me. And I think the GriefShare primarily is responsible for that. Hmm. And I enjoy the friendship and all the people that I met there.
And Jim, if there's somebody listening today who's going through something like you or another type of loss, what kind of recommendation would you give for them toward participating in GriefShare?
Well, I've already done that a couple of times with friends of mine that are going through a similar situation. And they have called up and have gotten connected with the church and are going to GriefShare. I think they're going via a video instead of actually attending the program, but I think you need to attend the program, but any way can help you. I think the workbook is fantastic. I would certainly recommend it.
Well, Jim, thank you for sharing a bit of your journey here and giving us just a little bit of a view into what you've been dealing with. And we're glad that you are a part of Washington Heights now as well. And every Sunday I walk in there, I see you stand in the back there where I walk in, and it's a pleasure to have you as a part of the family.
Thank you, Roy.
All right. Take care, Jim.
Yeah.
So what is available around me? And what could I lean into in moments that are difficult? GriefShare is happening right now, and the opportunity is there to still be a part of it. And if you'd like to or find out more about it, you can text the word grief. It's an IE word, not an EI word, to that number there. And we'd be glad to give you the information you need to see if that might meet where you are right now. So that's what Jesus saw, what Mary saw, the opportunities that were available around her. What did John see? So Jesus says to his friend John, "Behold your mother." And church tradition tells us from that time, John took Mary and basically treated her like his own mother. And until her last day that she was together with him. Initially in Jerusalem, persecution came. People were scattered in all different directions. John went to become a pastor in a city called Ephesus, modern-day Turkey. Mary went with him, and that is where she lived out the rest of her days. And so to somebody who has known Mary in one context, Jesus invites her to see another context because of her need. And I think it asks this question, can I see the needs that are around me? And we might say, well, there's a whole world of needs out there. Could you be a little bit more specific? Let me give you three different arenas in which the Bible invites us to see needs. Some of it is in our immediate family. And so these are people to whom we are related, and there's some strong language there about doing exactly that, and some strong words about, you know, people who do not do that. And I think that is for all the right reasons there that we're invited, that, hey, if you're in a family, that can be the place where you need to focus and help to meet a need. This circle gets a little bit larger, and there's also a spiritual family that we can be a part of. And there's some language in the New Testament that is not meant to be weird and creepy. And I know that there can be some examples of what that looks like in this world. But this is meaning that we might not be related by blood, but we are related by blood that Jesus shed. And what he sought to do was to create a community where it really was like extended family. That it is relational language meant to communicate a network that is around us, where there is ultimately help that is found in the form of people. enlarging the circle even more. There are others, and you find language like you do in James, that pure and undefiled religion, faith before God, is caring for widows and orphans in their need. And we say, yeah, when I look at those bullet points, that's so overwhelming. But let me just remind you of this. As Jesus is speaking these words to John on the cross, how many people did he want him to care for? One. And there's a phrase that's not original to me. I've heard it now for a couple years, and it goes something like this. So if you wonder, well, what am I supposed to do? There's so much need out there. How about this? Do for one what you wish you could do for all. And maybe it's in one of these different arenas and in different seasons and times of life, it could switch, you know, which category we might be in. But as we live out life here, may we see the needs that are around us, because it could well be that God is inviting us to do just that. Let's talk about something that I think is really important, and it's not this. Actually, I put this up before. These are the areas you can get involved here, and I think those are ways that we can live out exactly what we're talking about, is getting involved and serving people here. But let's talk about motive. What's our motive for doing things, for serving people? And sometimes it can be heavy-handed, it can be very guilt-filled, like we need to get ourselves right with God, we need to, you know, show God that we've done more good things than bad things, and can I just say, it is none of those. On the cross, Jesus' words help us to understand the place of serving other people. Because where did it begin? Jesus began with words of forgiveness to those who were brutally torturing him to death. Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Being made right with God begins with God's forgiveness. It is nothing we do. It is the gift that God offers to us. That's how anybody is made right. We don't work our way into God's good graces, not one bit. That is his doing. And along with that, and as Pastor Matt talked about last week and did such a great job, Jesus continues to speak with words of assurance. Truly today, he says to one of the people being crucified next to him, you will be with me in paradise. Who has the right to say that? Who knows, right, what happens? Jesus does. And that's what he did. And so the assurance is not on this side. It is in the grace and the power of God. And now, what does he talk about? Now he speaks of service. And it is in a relationship and in the confidence that comes from God's doing that we can serve, not as a way of earning anything. It is simply responding to what God has already done. What's maybe a concise way to say what we're talking about here is save people, saved by the grace and the power of God. What do? They serve people. And they do it simply as a response to all that God has accomplished for us already. I invite you to bow your heads together with me. God, we thank you for who you are, and even for the life that you lived in the more difficult moments, you show us so much about life in this broken world. And God, may we express the heart of God, the character of God, the motive of simply serving others because you have served us in every way. And it's only because of you that we can belong to you and be safe in that relationship. And so God, for each one of us here in this room, may you show us ways in which we can make this real, that we can not just know the heart of God, but that we can express it and live it and make it real in all kinds of ways that point to you and only to you and bring honor and glory to your name. So we ask and pray this in Jesus' name, amen.